Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Take the short drive to Genesee County and Batavia Downs for the Rockin' the Downs Concert Series when we welcome legendary Motown artist The Spinners Friday, June 26th. Get tickets at BataviaConcerts.com. Hear songs like The Rubber Band Man, Working My Way Back to You, I'll Be Around, and many more. Tickets start at just $20 and include $10 in free play. Be sure to get them now at BataviaConcerts.com.
Batavia Downs with more, lots more.
Talk to me about, were her hands in the rope? Was that, tell me about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, her hands were in the rope.
Does he have an alibi?
Alibi for, Mary? Oh, what was his alibi?
Your task will not be an easy one. Your enemy is well-trained, well-equipped, and battle-hardened.
There is not a liberal America and a conservative America. There is the United States of America.
Hey folks, it's Rick Wilson. Welcome back to the Lincoln Project Podcast. Super happy you're with us as always. We really appreciate everybody in our audience. If you could do me that one favor before we get going, hit that like and subscribe in whatever platform you're listening to us on, whether it's YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever it is. That really helps the algorithm find the show, get the message out to more people. Really do appreciate it. I am thrilled today to welcome Isabel Vincent to the show. Isabel has a phenomenal new book out that you are going to love. It's called RFK Jr., The Fall and Rise. And a lot of us have watched RFK in the last couple of years become a central figure in the MAGA / MAHA universe. And you hear the crazy stories, the whale on the roof of the car.
Just weeks after he admitted to dumping a dead baby bear in Manhattan.
I said, let's go put the bear in Central Park and we'll make it look like he got hit by a plane.
The longtime conservationist allegedly sawed the head off a dead whale back in 1994 after it washed up on a Massachusetts beach. Kennedy reportedly cut off the whale's head and then bungee corded it to the roof of the family minivan before driving it across state lines to bring it back to his New York home so he could study the skull. RFK's daughter, Kick Kennedy, originally shared the fishy anecdote more than a decade ago, calling the stunt normal day-to-day stuff.
Or the raccoon penis.
You apparently once cut the penis off a roadkill raccoon to study them later.
Secretary, what did you do with the raccoon's dead penis? Where is it now?
The belief in completely insane theories about vaccines.
But your vice presidential pick wants to recall the Moderna vaccine. That's the one I got. Most people are alive today, I think, because of the vaccine. I think that's the truth.
All of it has come together in a moment where only he, and only he at this moment, could rise to the position of running America's entire healthcare system. It should frighten you. And when you read this book, it will frighten you more. Isabel Vincent, thank you for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it. Talk to me, first off, about what led you, I ask every author this question, what led you to write this book?
First of all, thank you for having me. I'm really honored. What led me to write the book, I've been in Bobby Kennedy's head for about 13 years. And a year after his second wife committed suicide, a source, a very good source of mine who was close to her, gave me access to 3 of his diaries. And
right.
At the time, we were very interested in all of the sex in the diaries because he had a ledger at the back where he had women's names and he gave them a number from 1 to 10, depending on how far he'd gotten. This was according to Mary, 10 meaning that he'd gone all the way.
Right.
Some, on some of besides some of the women's names, he also wrote the word victory. And that meant that he hadn't slept with them. And so the diary, you know, I've got 1,200 pages of his diaries. It's in three volumes. And they were really a way for him to sort of deal with his addictions. He was going to AA. He says he's still going to AA every day. So this was a way for him to document and try to overcome what was an addiction to sex, but what also had been an addiction to heroin. So I had these, and in 2023, when he ran for president, I thought, oh my God, I've got all this other information that we've never published at the New York Post. You know, we published a few things, but you know, where did all his ideas come from? Where did his ideas on vaccines come from? That's what, you know, everybody was asking me. And I found a passage in which he talks about his grade 12 biology teacher who had the most influence on his life. And it's this guy, Skip Lazell, who taught him biology and was a member of the John Birch Society.
Right. I remember the story popping up when you guys covered it. Yeah.
So the John Birch Society was this secretive group in the 60s, 50s and the 60s that didn't believe in fluoridation in drinking water because they thought it was a communist plot, believed that vaccines were government control. And you know, was also, this teacher was also a supporter of the Vietnam War. So here you have a Kennedy at, you know, a very young age, 17, 18, like being influenced by this man who he calls in his diary, the greatest influence in my life at school. So I thought I had all of these tidbits of information, as well as, you know, his whole raison d'etre has always been to be president. And he's been told this as you know, from a very early age, like by his own father, who said to a family friend, he's most like the president, meaning he was comparing him to his brother, JFK.
Right.
So I'm like, I had all this stuff. And then I had the New York Times calling me and saying, can we have access to those diaries? and, you know, because there was some very heartfelt things in the diaries. At one point, he's in prison in Puerto Rico for civil disobedience at Vieques.
He's talking
about his father, and he calls him daddy. He says, I know daddy's looking down at me from heaven, and I know I've been a failure. And he lists his own issues, you know, his addiction to sex, his various addictions. And he's talking about how he can, you know, make his mark on the world. So I thought all of a sudden, like we have this, you know, we have this Kennedy who's in the Trump White House, very important position. He's you know, partly fulfilled his dream of being in the presidential cabinet. And we don't know that much about him. He's very much caricatured. And who is the real Bobby Kennedy Jr.?
I think we mentioned before that Renee and I are hot sleepers, but we don't wake up in the morning sweaty. We don't wake up in the morning stuck to the sheets. We don't have to crank the air down to 64 degrees. Renee and I both hate sleeping hot. And so that's why Boll & Branch's summer bedding options are astounding. They're breathable, they're light, and they're designed to keep you cool all night long. These are some of the softest sheets you'll ever encounter, but they're also woven of 100% organic cotton so that the airflow is always keeping you cool. They're unlike these synthetic sheets with either a chemically treated fabric or some other cooling technology, whatever that means. This cooling comes from the structure of how the cotton is woven. It's as organic as it gets, folks. And that big lore about Boll & Branch sheets getting softer, it's 100% true. You know, we absolutely love our Boll & Branch sheets. We were clients of Boll & Branch before Boll & Branch was a sponsor of this show. You know, you never sleep hot again with Boll & Branch. Sleep cooler this summer with Boll & Branch during the annual summer event. For a limited time, get 20% off site-wide at bollandbranch.com/Lincoln with code Lincoln. That's Boll & Branch, B-O-L-L-A-N-D, branch.com/Lincoln, code Lincoln, to take 20% off. bollandbranch.com/Lincoln, code Lincoln. Exclusions apply. No, but it's a really good frame up because I think that this is one of the things where I worked in New York politics a long time. So I kind of knew some of the crazy stuff just from the edges that he, you know, it wasn't just Riverkeeper. It was his whole trial lawyer thing with the anti-vaccine lawsuits. And, but I think most Americans really weren't paying much attention to him until he ran for president and started to drift into that MAGA orbit very quickly.
What's your pitch to a Trump supporter watching this or listening to this right now?
If you want, you know, the America back, you know, the America I think we all envision, I don't think that he's going to give it back to you, and I will.
Do you think that this is that his turn to MAGA, that his migration from being the scion of one of the Democratic royal families of America into being somebody who really did help Donald Trump win?
He is a great person. I've known him for so long. For the past 16 months, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Don't you want a safe environment for your children? Don't you want to know that the food that you're feeding them is not filled with chemicals that are going to give them cancer and chronic disease? And don't you want a president that's going to make America healthy again?
Among a group of lower political engagement folks, but who were motivated by the anti-vax stuff, and the sort of health influencer complex.
When I embarked on creating a series, I actually have an entire series called A Shot in the Dark, where I speak about vaccines to parents. As soon as COVID happened, I was like, nope, this is what they do. How could they do this? This is so evil. How could they lie like this?
And everybody will say, oh, there's no study that shows autism and vaccines are connected. That's just crazy. You know, that's people who are not looking at science. So anyway,
but they want to say that. It's well, like it's
part of the religion.
Yes,
right.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah,
it really does seem like
a
religion.
And the heretics have to be burned at the stake.
Yes.
They have to be humiliated, yes. Silenced, destroyed.
When was the moment that he realized he was going to shift over to Trump?
So I think yes, it was. He did help Trump win, and if you look at how he was polling in some of the battleground states. Before he embraced Trump, I mean, he had like 12%.
Yeah, nothing.
Yeah, and he created, you know, this MAGA revolution. When was the moment? I think political. He saw his dream, or he saw the ability to fulfill his dream. Again, let's go back to his childhood.
Right.
Being president was something that was drilled into him from a very young age. So if he had to embrace the other side, he was going to do it. And he talks about his father in his diaries, you know, taking on Republicans in his own administration when he was attorney general. And his father not really caring about what party that somebody belonged to, as long as they were not corrupt. And
right.
You know, and they did their work. And again, you know, Bobby Kennedy started off his career working alongside Roy Cohen, which, you know, is very interesting to me. And as Attorney General, wiretapped Martin Luther King Jr. So, you know, you have all these things that don't exactly fulfill what you were saying about, you know, the
Kennedy mythos,
progressive,
right.
Sort of paradigm. So I think that was something that he, you know, going through the trajectory, I wasn't surprised that he embraced Donald Trump. I thought this is, you know, he's very bloody minded that way. And this was a way for him to fulfill a huge dream.
I, Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
I, Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
Do solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
Congratulations, Mr. Secretary.
You know, and he believes, like having talked to people who have known mm-hmm. him for years and years, Bobby really believes that what he's doing. Yes, there's the aspect that he's made millions of dollars being an environmental crusader and being against vaccines, but he really believes that what he's doing is right.
Yeah, I think that I remember him. I ran into him at one point when he was just pretty much doing Riverkeeper. I think he had not quite started all the anti-vax stuff at that point. He was at some event in New York at the and yeah, was very passionate about closing Indian Point and protecting the Hudson and all this other stuff. And it struck me at the time that it seemed smaller than the Kennedy legacy, but also consonant with it.
Correct.
In a lot of ways. You know, everybody wants to reset every spring, start over, reboot, get things going in a different direction. And one of the things that Renee and I both were talking about earlier in the year was it's time for a new mattress. And so now we have a Lisa mattress. And wow, I forgot what it's like to wake up without a lot of aches and pains and stiffness in the morning. And we've been sleeping on this Lisa mattress for a couple of weeks now, and it's cool, it's soft, it's supportive in the right places. You know, we've been absolutely thrilled with it. And, you know, it was great to discover Lisa's lineup of really beautifully crafted mattresses tailored to how you sleep. Each Lisa mattress is designed for specific sleep positions and the feel preferences that everyone has a different. Some people want a softer mattress. Some people want a more firm mattress. Lisa can get you anything in that range you need. They customize this so that you'll know within one night there's a difference. The premium materials deliver real comfort, serious comfort, and full body support, no matter how you sleep. Take the Lisa sleep quiz and you'll find your perfect match in less than 2 minutes. Lisa mattresses are meticulously designed and assembled in the U.S. with exceptional quality. They back it all up with free shipping, easy returns, and a 120-night sleep trial. I can tell you, ours is not going back. We absolutely love it. Lisa's been awarded the best hybrid and memory foam mattress by the New York Times Wirecutter, and it's been featured in West Elm as their mattress partner. Lisa isn't just about sleep. They work with local nonprofits across the U.S. to donate thousands of mattresses each year to families in need, with over 43,000 donated to date. And these are eco-friendly materials, sustainable manufacturing, all the things you want in a product and a mattress in particular. Go to Lisa.com for the early access July 4th sale, plus get an extra $50 off with promo code LincolnProject, exclusive for our listeners. That's Leesa.com, promo code LincolnProject, for the early access July 4th sale, plus an extra $50 off. Support our show and let them know we sent you after the checkout. Lisa.com, promo code LincolnProject. But talk to us about the origin story of his anti-vax moment. And I looked at the beginning of it. When I read this, the coverage of this, I thought to myself, this is a trial lawyer who looked at this like tobacco, or who looks at the trial lawyers of today who are looking at what's going to end up happening with social media and AI as an area where large companies would settle rather than fight.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And I'm curious what led him to the anti-vax stuff in the first place, and then where the transition happened between the position as a trial lawyer saying that the vaccines caused harm and the actual belief that they cause harm.
Right. So the story that's out there is that this woman appeared in Hyannis Port in around 2005 with like a box full of studies about Murkurian vaccines.
The Wakefield studies, right.
Yeah. And he told her to go away. She had a son who had autism, had severe autism, and she felt that it had come from a childhood vaccine. And he said, go away, I have to go sailing. So this is at the Hyannis Port House. And then she was still there when he came back, like several hours later. And he said to her, okay, I'll read what you leave your stuff. I'll read it and I'll get back to you, maybe. He eventually got back to her and got, you know, worked up about the whole mercury issue. But I agree with you. I think it was, looking at it as a lawyer, it was like a new avenue to pursue. I mean, this was like a potential multi-million dollar endeavor. And at the time, at Riverkeeper, people are getting annoyed with him. I mean, there's like a big fight that goes on.
Yes.
Where Robert Boyle, the founder of the group, and mm-hmm. his mentor is ousted in a meeting because Bobby brings in this you know, environmentalist who goes to prison for stealing exotic birds in Australia and Boyle has nothing to do
with
it.
The birds in the pants story.
Right. And, you know, and flushing them down the toilet of the airplane if they're going to be found out. And so he's also trying to commercialize Hudson River water.
In the 1990s, RFK Jr., as an environmental attorney, championed a cleanup of the Hudson River that earned him the title Hero for the Planet in 1999.
According to EPA, they have already buried 1,200 miles of America's rivers and streams under the Clean Water Act, dumped rock, debris, and rubble into a waterway without a Clean Water Act permit, and you can never get such a permit. They rewrote the interpretation of one word of the Clean Water Act, the definition of the word fill. Now, I think I've run out of time for my prepared statement. I wanted to talk about CAFOs because they're even worse, but you have my testimony here, so.
And many people at Riverkeeper are like, no, this is not going to work. In fact, when he goes to his sister Rory's wedding in Hyannisport, which becomes the tragedy, the day before the wedding, JFK Jr. His wife and her sister are killed in a plane crash. He's got like boxes and boxes of this water to test out, you know, to do taste tests at the wedding. Anyway, he's seeing that time is like perhaps, you know, people are getting on his case.
Mm-hmm.
So he and when, you know, I talked to a lot of people at Riverkeeper who were at Riverkeeper who were like, well, we kept him on because the Kennedy name brings in a ton of money.
Sure.
And the same with the charity that he joins for the anti-vaccine charity, the Children's Health Defense.
Mm-hmm.
They go from a few $100,000 when millions. He joins to like $20 million when he leaves to run for president. So it's about money. A lot of it's about money. I mean, the environmental movement made him a millionaire several times over.
Oh, yeah.
And the anti-vaccine, you just had to look at his disclosures, you know, like when he went before the Senate, like he had to issue his disclosures. He was making a ton of money in referrals.
So like $8 million or something?
Yeah.
And moving on now to the drug pricing question and the disclosure of these deals. These secret deals with pharmaceutical companies set up a never-ending flood of goodies for big pharma. You take Pfizer, for example. The day after Pfizer's CEO stood in the Oval Office with Trump, the company's stock prices soared through the roof. Will you commit to releasing your written agreements with the pharmaceutical companies tomorrow?
No, I will not, and I can explain why. Those agreements contain proprietary information and trade secrets.
You know, and on top of the money he was making as an author, you know, writing the Fauci book sold 1.1 million copies. I mean, it was a make money thing, but you know, at the same time, even though all of his kids are vaccinated, yep. I go back to, I think he thinks he's making the world a better place.
You know, it's fascinating. There is a cult-like devotion to that anti-vax thing, not just with him, but with a lot of people who believe in that. And as you said, and as we were talking about earlier, that was a decisive thing in this weirdly emergent MAHA group, the Make America Healthy idea under Trumpism. And it had this weird intersection of influencers and frankly, some really quacky doctors, Casey Means types, and RFK. But he was really sort of the linchpin of putting that movement together. He was the sort of central pillar, the load-bearing pillar of that movement. This is a guy who the flaws in his character are made very explicable in this book. And the stuff you derived from the diaries about the flaws in his character, the addictions, the manipulation, I would categorize the nature of him as abusive to people around him in a lot of ways. I want to get to the story of his former wife's suicide.
Uh-huh.
Because in a lot of ways, this raises more questions in my mind than it answers. Can you walk us through the circumstances that you cover in this book of his ex-wife's, or well, I'm sorry, his former wife's, I'm going to say alleged suicide. You may disagree with that, but there's something wrong with this story.
Police found Mary Kennedy's body just after 1:30 Wednesday afternoon at a property an hour north of New York City that she once shared with her estranged husband, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Authorities have not released details of her death, saying only that her body was found in a building off the main house.
So Mary Kennedy was his second wife. He cheated on his first wife with Mary. He'd married his law school. His first wife was Emily Black. Mm-hmm. And she was one of his classmates at law school at the University of Virginia. He marries Mary when she's like 6 months pregnant in 1994. I'm just going to give you a little bit of the backstory. And so they're married from 94. I mean, they never get divorced, actually. Mary dies, or Mary commits suicide during a very contentious, protracted divorce negotiations. One of the reasons she took the diaries was because she wanted to use them as leverage. She was threatening to expose, you know, his many infidelities. In one diary, I counted 37 different women. And, you know, this was something that, you know, was rumored for a long time, but Mary was living through this. And, you know, Mary should have really known better. She's been Kennedy adjacent since she was 14. Mary was best friends with Carrie Kennedy, his younger sister. They went to boarding school together. They went to Brown together. Bob Colicello, who ran Interview Magazine and employed Mary during the Andy Warhol years, talked about Mary being Carrie's lady in waiting. I mean, they were together all the time. So she grew up in that whole Kennedy milieu.
Hey, folks, I don't know if your summer looks like our summer, but this one's crazy. We're traveling a lot, mostly for work, I'm afraid. We have got jam-packed weekends with friends and family. Everyone's trying to pack everything into the summer that they can. We found that one thing that really helps keep our summer under control and to not let everything go by the wayside is AG1. It's super simple. One scoop, 8 ounces of water every morning. AG1 is a daily health drink with a multivitamin, prebiotics, probiotics, superfoods, and antioxidants. One scoop, 8 ounces of water, one drink. It's that easy. It's got a next-gen formula with 75 ingredients backed by 4 clinical trials. It's clinically shown to help support gut health and fill in some common nutrient gaps that we all tend to have. It also improves your key nutrient levels within 3 months. Stick with it, and you're going to see that improvement. You know, these late nights, these long weekends, this travel, the plans, life happens. And AG1 is so simple as a part of your routine that it helps you keep things consistent. It's high-quality nutritional support you can do every day, no matter where you are, where you're traveling. Start your morning with AG1. Renee and I have made AG1 a part of our morning routine, and we're really enjoying it. And I feel the benefits from AG1. Want to try it yourself? Visit ag1.com/Lincoln Project to get a free morning person hat and a free AG1 flavor sampler in your welcome kit with your first AG1 subscription. It's an $82 value. That's drinkag1.com/Lincoln Project.
Okay, so here they're married. They have 4 young children. The diary is full of Bobby complaining about Mary complaining that he's never home, that when he is home, that he doesn't care about the schedule for his kids because Mary is left to do all of that. And he doesn't get it. He's like, oh, here she goes again. She's upset with me again. You know, we don't have sex anymore. Mary is, you know, really hostile. You know, I'm trying to get her help. We're praying together. So, you know, on the one hand, he's like very perceptive about, you know, things that he has to do. But on the other hand, he's incredibly entitled and somehow doesn't want to understand what his wife's going through.
Right.
So she commits. So during these divorce negotiations, and by the way, he tells her he's going to divorce her on Mother's Day around 2009. So the divorce, like, she dies in 2012 in May actually, which actually I never really put that together until now around Mother's Day. It's, you know, she's going through not only all of the, you know, the humiliation of all of the affairs, but then he starts with, you know, his relationship with Cheryl Hines. And Cheryl Hines is posting on social media at the time that Mary is going through a very hard time. She's got an alcohol addiction that she's trying to deal with. She has depression. And by the way, I spoke to her psychiatrist, and she said that Mary was not a depressed person who had all of these demons as Carrie and RFK Jr. Wrote about after her death. I think they were really mean about describing who, you know, she was. She wasn't like that, according to the people around them, but she was putting up with all of this stuff.
You know, the Kennedy family does love to, like, write its own history.
Exactly. Anyway, so that she's going through the divorce, Cheryl Hines is posting on social media how much his kids are bonding with her, and she's, like, going crazy, you know, and Cheryl Hines has in her own biography, in her own autobiography, Unscripted, that Kira Kennedy, their daughter, went to live with her in California when she was 16. So I did the math, and it's like, well, she turned 16 August 22nd, 2011. Mary dies May 2012. And I'm like, wait a second. So the kid, you know, went to live with her 8 months before the suicide at a time when Mary is going through a very hard time. And
sure.
Again, I spoke to the psychiatrist who said that one of the things that she was apoplectic about was the fact that the kids were hanging out with Cheryl. So Cheryl came out after this revelation came out from my book and said, no, she came to live with me after the suicide. Okay, I at this point, I don't know, but what she had in her own book suggested that it was before.
You and Robert, you actually met at one of Larry David's parties because you're both mutual friends of his.
We are, yeah.
Yeah, and we have a picture of him at your wedding. He doesn't look very thrilled. He was not optimistic about you guys as a couple when you first got together. He was just a little pessimistic.
Well, he's not optimistic about anything.
Is it more interesting being involved? Cheryl, I won't get dwell on this, with a Kennedy.
Please dwell on it. You know, it's this... the family that a lot of, that most people know of and feel like they have some sort of connection with. And they're always out in the spotlight, whether they want to be or not. So it's a double-edged sword.
And tragedy hung around them for
tragedy,
a lot of time.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, that may also be true for a lot of families if you looked at
just
someone's
not
family.
Public page.
Yeah, it's not, it doesn't make the headlines if someone's family member dies.
So you've got this buildup of all of this pressure and humiliation, and bang, you know, May 16th, 2012, she's found hanging in, you know, the family's, like, garage barn in Westchester.
My God, it's so shocking. You know, 52 years old, a beautiful woman, an architect. She was a wonderful mother, a good parent. How could this happen?
Can we talk through the timeline of that, like, last 24 hours or so? Because I found that fascinating.
Okay, so the police report is very interesting. And I would say that I would like it to be unredacted. I am not sure why it's redacted. It's a public document. I mean, usually usually authorities redact for minors, you know, minors' names or for social security numbers. This is redacted. I'll explain to you, one of the redactions, which just drives me crazy. 2 days before she kills herself, she gets a visit from somebody whose name is redacted, and that person makes her very upset. And I'm like, okay, why can't we know that? Who was that? I'm not thinking that it was, you know, RFK Jr. It might have been somebody else, but this is sort of a key to understanding, you know, those, as you said, those last, like, few hours of her life. Mary's family was, the answer is that we don't really know. Mary's family was so upset about everything that had taken place that they hired an investigations firm, a very a very prominent one, to look at those, you know, few hours to figure out where Bobby was, where, you know, how the body was discovered. Everything proved inconclusive. I saw the emails back and forth from the investigation firm to the family. One of the questions they had was, did Mary know how to tie a nautical knot? And, you know, maybe because she'd been hanging around in Hyannisport since she was 14, she could very well have known how to tie a nautical knot. Again, it was inconclusive. And when we came out with that story, because we wrote about that in the Post at the time, a few days after that story, Newsweek had a story about how there was a book about nautical knots in her bedroom. And I just thought, okay, that's kind of ham-fisted here. I'm not sure why that wouldn't have been in the police report. Now, that's not in the police report. What's in the police report is that she left her glasses on in her room, and she was always seen with her glasses around her neck, hanging from a chain. And she had like almost $3,000 in her wallet. Those were the weirdest things that came out in the police report. But she died of asphyxiation. Mm-hmm. And the other weirdness after her death was that she was buried in Hyannisport. And a couple of weeks after the burial, RFK Jr. disinters her, or has her disinterred and moved to a different part of the cemetery. And he claimed at the time that he'd bought a family plot and that he wanted Mary to be, you know, within that plot, which was, at first she was buried next to Eunice Shriver. Eunice Shriver and Sergeant Shriver. And then he had her moved. And this was like a front page story. I remember the Daily News broke that story and it was on the front page. And it was like insane.
Now Mary Kennedy's final resting place is beneath a sickly oak tree with only a small statue of the Virgin Mary to look over her. There is no marker identifying where she lies.
And she died a married woman, by the way. They never got a divorce.
Talk to us about how the AA sponsor and RFK were the ones on the scene, basically, when this was discovered.
So, again, this is all, Bobby is the one who calls 911. From what I understood, they got in touch with each other. I'm not clear who called whom, whether it was the AA sponsor who called Bobby or Bobby who called the AA sponsor. I think it was the latter. And they went searching through the property, because the housekeeper was, you know, didn't know where Mary was. She hadn't come down for breakfast, and they found her. Now, another version of the story that I recently heard was that one of the housekeepers found Mary, but that person was so upset and did not want to be the witness for the police. It's unclear. But again, I go back to the police report is redacted, so we don't know. We do know from the police report that Bobby was the one who called the police. The police came. I'd also heard that he took down the body, probably in shock. And that's kind of all we know. And then the police takes over. He prevents the family, and again, I have heard from various sources, her family from coming on to the property. So we don't know if she left a suicide note. We don't know about the phone, her phone, a computer. None of that was taken by the police. None of that was mentioned in the police report.
In these uncertain times, one thing is certain. Central banks are selling U.S. treasuries and buying more gold than any time in modern history. Morgan Stanley is now telling clients to put 20% of their portfolio in gold, replacing half of their bonds. When the biggest money in the world moves from the dollar to gold, it's worth asking why. Thankfully, my trusted partner, America's Gold Company, put together a comprehensive guide to help you protect and grow your life's work. I read their gold guide, and it talked about how physical gold can be held in an IRA. It's under my name, my control, and no institution between me and the gold. So head to claimmygoldguide.com/Lincoln to claim your free gold guide. that shows you exactly how to move a portion of your IRA or 401k into a physical gold without triggering taxes or penalties, plus up to $10,000 in free silver for qualified purchases. That's claimmygoldguide.com/Lincoln.
So, and I'm not sure that legally he should have been on the property if they had a separation. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right. It's sure.
It was her. I mean, it was still, I guess, joint marital property, but right. It was, she had to, or somebody had to invite, like the divorce was not abated by her death. And I know that her lawyers had a really big problem with that at the time.
It's fascinating to me because in reading all this, the sense of like one or two little off notes is one thing, but there are like a whole symphony of off notes about her death in my mind. The nautical knot, I don't know which knot it was, but clearly that was something. Talk to me about, were her hands in the rope? Was that, tell me about
that.
Yeah,
her hands were in the rope. And this was something I spoke to her psychiatrist about. And her psychiatrist said, you know, sometimes people who do commit suicide at the last second, they're like, what am I doing? So, you know, she had an explanation for that.
Right.
Maybe in the end, she didn't want to do that. I don't know. Like I said, and I keep saying this, and I don't know if I can sue Bedford police at this point to get that redacted document unredacted. I want to know, you know, and I think, you know, RFK Jr. would want that, you know, sort of out there about what happened. Like, are they redacting it because we're dealing with Kennedys? Like, who had the influence to do that? Because again, I've done a lot of FOIL, Freedom of Information requests, into public documents, and I've never seen a police incident report like this.
That is very strange, especially when no children are involved.
Right. Usually,
that is usually the redaction line of names and information about children. And rightly
or,
so.
Or, honestly. You know, during like their divorce is sealed, you know, because it involves children. Well, all divorces in New York State are sealed.
So in the course of all this, is a police investigation going on. Does he have an alibi?
Alibi for, Mary? Oh, what was his alibi? I don't know. I mean, he does because, you know, the housekeepers said that they called him, and then, you know, because they were worried about Mary. And so I'm only going from what's in the public record.
Sure.
And then again, he or the AA sponsor called each other and arrived together at the Westchester property and started searching. So that was whatever alibi, but Mary's siblings wanted to know where he had been because, you know, they had been witness to the fact that he had put her through a very, very awful divorce negotiations. And one of the things that was a sticking point before she died was her lawyers were trying to find out how much money Bobby had in the Kennedy family trust. So Joe Kennedy, the patriarch, sets up something called the Park Agency in 1949, a trust, and all of the Kennedys are like paid from it. And it's been this kind of secretive amount of cash that they all live off of. And so this was the sticking point. And this was the reason Mary had supposedly taken these diaries and was going to make all this stuff public, because he was refusing, according to the attorneys and according to sources that I spoke to give her any sense of how much he was really worth. But the AA sponsor have never spoken. Oh my God, I've tried so hard. A lot of people just completely clammed up over this. They're so afraid of going against a Kennedy.
One other question for you on that front. Did the forensics indicate how long she had been dead?
Yeah, well, her body had gone into rigor mortis. So I think,
hours.
Yeah, so that's several hours that she had been dead.
Do we know what he was doing in the day or the hours before he and the AA sponsor talked?
We don't know, but one thing that I actually found out just a little while ago is in going back, like a lot of people have now contacted me and sure. I've spoken to another one of Mary's doctors. And one of the things that this person said was that Bobby was convinced she was going to kill herself. And that he would call sort of incessantly and say, Mary is suicidal. Mary's going to kill herself. And now this is, he wasn't living at the house at that point. He was living somewhere else in Westchester, or he was in LA with Cheryl Hines. Right. But he was obviously worried that something like this was going to happen. And then after Mary died, like the calls stopped to the psychiatrist. And the psychiatrist also told me that nobody paid her last bill.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
For being such a remarkably weird and flawed guy whose family has, the Kennedy family, I'd love to talk about this for a minute. They have largely just disowned him. They're publicly now like, you're in us.
The Kennedy family endorses Joe Biden for president.
Kennedy's cousin, Caroline, called him a predator.
Bobby preys on the desperation of parents of sick children, vaccinating his own kids, while building a following, hypocritically discouraging other parents from vaccinating theirs.
What do you say to someone who knows your family, knows your father and what he stood for, your uncle, but is supporting your brother because of that legacy?
Yeah, I would say look closely at that legacy. Think about who Bobby Kennedy was, who my father was.
They've cut him off completely. Talk us about why that happened and how that happened.
So the Kennedy family is a large clan. You've always had issues between the John F. Kennedy side. So Caroline Kennedy, who wrote the letter when he was before the Senate, you know, saying that he's a predator. He, you know, as a kid, he used to put baby chicks and mice in a blender and turn it on to scare his cousins. And I mean, it was, if he did do that, I mean, he was doing it to feed his hawks because he's long been a Faulkner. So there's always been issues between those two sides of the family. His own siblings, though, he's got 10 brothers and sisters, two of them who've died, but they went against him during the election. Although some of them have remained by his side, I think Max mm-hmm. Kennedy, his younger brother,
right.
and Douglas Kennedy, but certainly Carrie Kennedy, who he was very close to, and who runs the Robert F. Kennedy Foundation, issued a number of, you know, social media sort of edicts saying, you know, he's ruining America. He's very dangerous, but I don't know. I still feel that maybe it's public posturing with his siblings, but I still feel there's a connection there. They've gone through a lot together, beginning with the assassination.
Yeah, the family clearly has a shared burden of trauma that none of us can really grasp, I think. So let me ask you this question to wrap this up. This has been a fascinating interview, Isabel. I really want to thank you for coming on the show today. Knowing what you know about him, and although he said, I'm not going to run in 28, knowing what you know about him, knowing what you know about his personality and the drives that push him, the demons that push him, does he stop? Does he run for president, or does he just walk off the stage after all this?
Oh no, I think he's going to run. I think he's going to run for president again. If past is prologue, and yep. and if you're looking at what he's been told his whole life, I mean. When he lived in Westchester, he had a wall of every president's signature. I mean, except for one, I think, of framed signatures of the presidents. I mean, he really believes that this is the public service that he's meant to do. In his diary, at one point, he talked about, you know, all the speeches he was making across the country doing his environmental work. And he was saying, I'm never going to be better. You know, people would come up to him and say, you changed my life. You know, I'm a lawyer, but now I want to be an environmental lawyer like you. And he was saying in his diary, you know, am I only going to be this gentleman environmentalist? I want to do more in the world. And so I think this is the impetus that takes him from that to the vaccines, to writing the book about Anthony Fauci, to where he is now. And I think, yes, he's going to run for president. I'd be surprised if he wouldn't.
Folks, the book is RFK Jr., The Fall and Rise. It's by Isabel Vincent. You will absolutely find it riveting. It in many ways raises as many questions as it asks about the personality and the character of a guy who has become, for better or for worse, a big part of the national political landscape that we face ahead of us. And Isabel, thank you again for coming on the show. Tell folks where they can find you on social media.
Oh, I'm bad at social media, but I'm on Instagram, by Isabel Vincent, at by Isabel Vincent. I'm mostly on Instagram, Facebook, all the
usuals.
Things on X. Yeah.
Well, folks, the book came out in April.
Yeah. So it's everywhere books are sold.
I love that. I hope you have a great success with it. And thank you again for coming on the show today. And we look forward to talking to you again soon, Isabel.
Thank you. My honor and pleasure. Thank you.
The Lincoln Project Podcast is a Lincoln Project production. Executive produced by Whitney Hayes, Ben Howe, and Joey Wartner-Cheney. Edited by Riley Main. Hey, folks, if you want to support the Lincoln Project's work against Donald Trump, Elon Musk, and this MAGA craziness, go to action.lincolnproject.us/helplp. If you'd like to get in touch or have suggestions for a guest or a show topic, or just want to say hi, our email is podcast@lincolnproject.us. For our MAGA friends, please, no more nudes. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you again next time.
Good night, and good luck.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.